The loud trumpet I can associate with the same kind of noise you hear at JFK International Airport after a TWA 727 or 747 has taxied down the runway and is about to turn off the engines. For some reason, they get louder before shutting off completely. In verse 18, the smoke could have been the result of an aircraft's propulsion system. I continued my recitation to my young teacher. The mountains quaking could be the echoing of the landing sounds. In verse 19, the voice of the trumpet might have been some sort of loudspeaker system. This whole conversation began to get too serious for my comfort, so I added playfully, "And the burning, the smoke, was probably weeds, plants, or garbage like paper cups, fried chicken boxes, what have you, left by people after their coffee breaks." "You're being funny," she said, laughing, "but you're getting the idea. Now, look at Ezekiel. First chapter, verse 4. I began reading again, and I looked, and behold, a whirlwind came out of the north, a great cloud, and a fire unfolding itself, and a brightness was about it, and out of the midst thereof as the color of amber, out of the midst of the fire. Just listen to the words. This is a descriptive narration. The guy is just giving us a detailed account of what is happening. Take it from the very beginning, see his style descriptive. It's hard to refute after you read the whole thing. It doesn't seem possible that this man could have made it all up, or that he was tripping on something. Fine. I believe you. I believe what's in here. It makes a lot of sense. But why didn't they teach it that way in Hebrew school? We'll get to that later, she said. Let's get back to Exodus for now, chapter 13-19. Remember the part where the Jews get out of captivity in Egypt? Right. Then start reading from here. And Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had straitly sworn the children of Israel, saying, "God will surely visit you, and ye shall carry up my bones hence with you." And they took their journey from Succoth, and encamped in Etam, in the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of a cloud, to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire, to give them light, to go by day and night. He took not away the pillar of the cloud by day, not the pillar of fire by night, from before the people. Rama said, "Doesn't it make sense that this pillar of cloud by day and pillar of fire by night has to be some kind of UFO? Maybe if I hadn't seen those flying things hovering over this mountain yesterday, I'd say you were cuckoo, but after what I saw, I guess I could imagine Moses talking to someone inside a UFO at Mount Sinai in biblical times." I looked at her questioningly. "Yesterday you didn't seem surprised at all. Do you know something more about this than you've been telling me?" "Yes, I know a great deal," she said without hesitation. "Much more than you seem to know. Now, going back to what IWS saying, don't you think that these words, just by matching mental images to the literal translation, can mean something today? You can take any Bible of any religion, any translation, any version, and every single one of them will tell you that Elijah went up to heaven in a chariot of fire." My cynicism forgotten, I said, "Wow. You are really blowing my mind. I've always wondered what made you hippies so interesting. What else can you tell me? What you're saying makes a lot of sense to me. I guess you were right when you said that one doesn't always have to be a genius to understand what you're saying. Charles, I told you that you have the right kind of mind. I'm glad I met you. You understand, and that's important. What does that mean?" "It means we always look for people who are open to these subjects." "But how could you know I am open to those sub.cts? It's written all over you. Just remember the day before yesterday when you saw the sign about UFOs in Ticlio, you laughed. Look at you now, you're a believer." She started to laugh, and suddenly got up to go to the edge of the water. I sat there with my Bible, completely amazed. Then it dawned on me. I had never told her about reading that sign. How did she know? She called to me then. Together we walked towards one of the bathhouses. When we went in, Rama undressed without a trace of shyness and jumped into the water. I stared, transfixed. She was absolutely beautiful. I had never seen such physical perfection. Even though she was very petite, her anatomical proportions were exquisitely feminine. Without hesitating, I took off my clothes and followed her into the pool. Rama, you are indeed a beautiful girl, I said, feeling a need to make some comment on the subject. She didn't respond to my compliment, so I decided to make conversation along other lines. I was very curious about this strange young woman. I wondered who was the we she had spoken of. Maybe a commune where young hippies lived together? These friends of yours, I said, do they have some ideas about flying saucers? Yes, very much so. Do you people have a name? What kind of a name? Well, like Jehovah's Witnesses or the Krishnas, you must call yourselves something. No, we don't have any identification tags. We don't live in one place, either. We go all over the world, talking to all kinds of people. Then how do you manage to finance yourselves, your magazines, literature, your trips? Do you sell dope or does the CIA support you? She laughed. You're cute. And you're getting to be a lot of fun. Stick around. That depends on what you have in mind, I said, with a seductive tone in my voice. Not what you have in mind, she said firmly, smiling. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. She interrupted. It's all right, you don't have to apologize for a man's natural reaction. And, by the way, we don't sell magazines, literature or dope. I was relieved she was able to take my promiscuous nature in stride. So far, we were getting along very well and I knew I shouldn't blow it by suggesting something like sleeping together. Not yet, anyway. I said, Rama, you have a nice easy way of handling people. Your attitude is healthy. Talking about healthy, how's your health? She asked. Great, I said, I feel fine. You really think so? Come over here and we'll see. Sit by the edge of the pool and let me see the bottoms of your feet. My feet. She took one of them and began pushing the knuckles of her fingers into the bottoms of it. I screamed in pain with some of the thrusts. She commented on each area, saying, this part of your feet reflects the lungs, this is your liver, your spleen, your spine. In a few minutes she told me I was smoking far too much, eating too much meat, and that my eyes were somewhat tired due to too much motion picture and television viewing. A month earlier a doctor in New York City had told me exactly the same thing. This is called foot reflexology, zone therapy. She explained when I questioned how she could know such things by massaging the bottoms of my feet. The very tips of the nerve endings of every organ in your body come all the way here to the bottom of your feet. When I put pressure in this part, you don't get any sensation of pain. What part of my body is that? Your spleen. But if I put pressure here, she said, pressing, you scream bloody murder. I screamed. That hurts. What part of my body was that? Your stomach. It seems you have an ulcer. She was right about that, too. I've been burning my blood with some job assignments lately, I said. Hey. This is really interesting. Actually, you can cure many things by massaging the key points where the nerve endings are. If you say so. Where did you learn these things? Just as I go along from people, places, books. Rama, you sure are full of surprises, but let's get back to UFOs. How does organized religion take this theory about finding evidence of spaceships in the Bible? So far, nothing is happening. I guess everyone is more concerned with church attendance. But there are scientists who are working on finding a connection between holy scriptures and the stars and other planets. Yes, I said, I remember not too long ago. There was something on television about ancient astronauts. At least I heard something to that effect. It's hard to make a point of seeing these things when one doesn't even imagine flying saucers exist. And there's a book by some German guy. About the gods. Chariot of the Gods, by Erich von Däniken, Rama quickly interjected. Yeah, that's it. There's even a movie about it. When you see a copy of the book, I suggest you read it. It'll convince you of the existence of UFOs. I'm convinced now. No, you're not. Not completely. You still have doubts, even after seeing them yourself. But von Daniken makes it easy to grasp the concept without problems. Well, now I'm anxious to get a hold of this book. If you're really interested, I could give you a long list of literature of the subject. Actually, a lot is being published in newspapers, magazines, books, on it. You mean I could go to my local library and study ufology as it is connected with holy scriptures, tradition and legend? I'd say, yes, you definitely could. Why aren't these works given publicity and media exposure, then? That would make it common knowledge throughout the world. Looking to me with a somewhat sad expression on her face, she said, I'll answer that question later.
Later?
Yes, later. I don't think you're ready for it now. Listen, I exploded, what's with all this? I'll tell you later, stick around. If I think you're open enough to handle it, we'll get to that. Rama, if you know something I don't, why don't you just level with me now? I consider myself to be an educated individual with the ability to handle some pretty tough things. Let me have it straight. Are you sure you can handle it? She said, baiting me. Look, I've been around, and seen a lot. And I've handled some heavy assignments in the past. At my age, I don't think here's anything that could shock me. How do I know you won't flip out on me? Well, unless you pull a gun on me, or get violent, I don't think I'm going to flip out on you. I like you. You seem peaceful enough. And whatever you tell me, I'll keep under my hat. I'm not the police. If you're into something heavy, I'll keep it to myself. I don't think you could upset me with anything you say. That's what you think. Oh, be a sweet little girl, let's get out of the water. Give me a dry. All right, she said. But I want no wisecracks nor any of your smart aleck attitude. I won't shove anything down your throat. You can believe what you want to believe, okay? Sounds like a fair deal, I said. But only if you promise to tell me the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Look, if I knew the whole truth, I would be God. I'll tell you what I know to the very best of my ability. For starters, what if I told you this world is coming to an end in 1 month and that you and the whole coastline of where you live would fall into the ocean and everyone was going to die 1 week before? Could you handle that? I'd just think you were one of those Jesus freaks going around scaring people about doomsday. I'd be very polite, listen to what you had to say, maybe contribute to your cause and then go my way very happily. Doing exactly a middle dot si damned well pleased. I figured you'd say something like that. You haven't surprised me. Well, you asked if I could handle it and I did. I guess that makes me pretty open. Pretty open so far. But wait until we get to the good part.
You mean there's more?
Plenty. What if I told you the world was coming to an end and used what's available to prove it to you simply, scientifically? If it made sense, would you accept it? What would you use? The Bible. That and other things. Science, prophecy, tradition, history, predictions, headlines, and news media. You name it, they all help prove my point. Well, is the world coming to an end?
Not next week.
But soon? Rama, I don't think anybody with half a brain is going to believe that. When I was a child, there were rumors about the world coming to an end in 1960. Here we are now in 1974 and we're still going strong. You just can't believe this nonsense anymore. Besides, why worry about it? The point isn't to worry about it, let's do something to be prepared for such a thing happening. And how do you plan to do that? Maybe you think you can do something from here on top of the Andes Mountains? Hiding and running away from God knows what? You Jesus freaks are all the same. You think you have all the answers. Let's do something to be prepared. Ha. Even if the world came to an end, how could you prepare for it?
There are many ways, Charles.
Oh, sure, and you can do it, right, Rama?
Why not? Her smile slowly disappeared. She was so serious, so sure of herself, I had to laugh.
I found her interesting, but I was losing interest in flying saucers and talk about the end of the world. I began scheming to get her into bed. I wasn't sure yet what approach to use on her. I knew it would be challenging. She was smart, opinionated, and the kind of girl who enjoyed giving a fellow a hard time. As I enjoyed my erotic fantasies in silence, watching her, she looked at me with a cool, penetrating gaze.
"Don't get any ideas," she said. "I'm not that kind of girl."
"They all say that," I said defensively. "What is it with you? How did you know what I was thinking? Are you psychic or something?"
"Something. You're something all right. But I'm not going to ask you anymore."
"No sense asking, since, according to you, I'm not open enough to handle it. You're with the CIA, right?"
"Wrong.
Don't be so sensitive. I'm being cautious for your own good."
"Rama, is it that terrible?"
I asked, genuinely concerned.
"Well, not exactly terrible, but
embarrassing?" I said, interrupting her thought process.
"No, not at all.
Look, it seems to me you've suddenly lost your interest in flying saucers," she accused.
"No, I haven't."
"Then why don't we continue? There's much more."
"What,
for instance? Did it ever occur to you that there may be life on other planets, in other parts of the universe?"
"Yes, it has come to my mind. But who cares about other life in the universe when there are more important things right here on Earth that need our immediate attention?
Have you ever wondered if life on the other planets could be the same as it is here, or what the people look like?"
"No, not really. But I believe you are about to be very sweet and tell me."
"Don't be so lazy," she said teasingly. "Try to figure it out for yourself."
"Well, those things we saw yesterday. There was intelligence inside. If nobody was there, then they were being manipulated from somewhere.
As for their appearance, I couldn't tell you very much. I didn't get a close look at them. Figuring it out for myself, the only thing I can say is they are probably monsters from outer space. Am I correct?"
"No, you're not.
They aren't monsters. Life all over the universe is basically the same as far as the form of the human body is concerned. The universe is inconceivably large, but there are few minor differences from one galaxy to another. These variations are mainly ones of size and color. But then, you have those differences right here on Earth. People are black, white, red, yellow."
"Oh, I see.
Then if I go to Mars, I'll find the Martians have a nose, eyes, mouth, all in a head, a body, with arms and legs."
"Exactly.
The differences are based upon atmosphere, climate, size of the planet, kinds of foods they eat. But life begins on a planet when it's brought to that planet by space travelers from another planet. The same way it started right here on Earth."
"You're telling me that life on our planet was started by cosmonauts who came here in flying saucers?"
"That's exactly what I'm saying."
"What about the theory of evolution, Darwin, Cro-Magnon man, the Neanderthal, Pithecanthropus erectus, all those
theories?"
"Just theories.
Has modern science come up with an answer to the missing link yet?"
"I really don't know."
"Well, let me assure you, they haven't.
If scientists would assume that, on Earth, interplanetary contact is a common thing, I'm sure they would have found that missing link a long time ago.
In other words, what you would have me believe is that at one time, when the Earth was populated by apes, some flying saucers landed here and by means of interplanetary pregnancies, men appeared on this planet.
It's not quite that simple.
But you're on the right track."
"No, it can't be.
It sounds too easy."
"But that's just the way it is, easy.
Then why is it that no one has ever even thought of going into something this simple?
Why hasn't anybody, after years of study and investigation by evolutionists, even considered the possibility that life on Earth was started by euphonauts? That's a long story, Charles. I couldn't handle another long story right now. It was early afternoon and I was getting hungry. I invited Rama to join me for lunch, but she said she would eat later. My hunger waits for no one, no matter how pretty, sexy, or intelligent. I went up to the restaurant and brought some fruit, cheese, wine and crackers back to where she waited near the bathhouses. She only took an occasional sip of my wine and a few bites of the food. For some reason, she seemed reluctant to permit herself to eat. We continued talking about the medicinal waters, acupuncture, zone therapy. Rama spoke simply and pleasantly. What she was saying began to seem reasonable to me. It suddenly dawned on me that I was starting to believe her. Rama, you're one heck of a salesman, I said, choosing to forget my own experience the day before. You've done a real good job on me, you're selling me on this UFO business. Charles, are you really interested? Interested in what? I teased. You'll have to be a little more specific. What would your reaction be if one day you were walking down the beach somewhere and suddenly you see a flying saucer come down and people started emerging from the saucer, walk up to you and engage you in conversation? I'd probably either go into shock immediately or start running like hell. Why that type of reaction? Scared. Fear of the unknown, like most people, I guess. What if I were to tell you that on the first week of July, 1968, you spoke to an extraterrestrial? How could you know something like that? That's almost 6 years ago. Listen to me very carefully, I will make you recall. You were in New York City on business. It was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You were standing at the subway station on the corner of Hillside Avenue and Parsons Boulevard, waiting to take an E or F train to go to the Paramount Pictures building in Manhattan. You spoke to a girl holding a sweater in 85-degree weather. Yes, I remember it very well, I said, no longer amazed by her ability to discern these things. She went with me to the office and afterwards to Radio City Music Hall. Later we dined together. And eventually she almost ruined my life. I'm glad you remember, Chicho, because here comes the punchline. Do you remember what happened after you dropped the girl off? Yes, I went to Amsterdam Avenue and 76th Street to pick up my car at a garage and then drove out to Long Island. Aren't you forgetting something else that happened? A hitchhiker thumbed a ride with me from Manhattan to Roosevelt Field, Westbury, or Garden City. I don't remember exactly. That's not important. Do you remember anything about your passenger? His looks, his conversation? He looked like something out of Washington Square, Sunset Strip, Woodstock, Tashbury. A real hippie. On the contrary, he was an extraterrestrial, a god, an angel, ufonaut, cosmonaut, call him whatever you like, but he was very real indeed, nothing to be frightened about. He talked about peace, love and how people in these times have forgotten to love one another. I really just half listened. What was really on my mind was the girl I'd just met, so I more or less tuned him out. Are you surprised that I've mentioned this incident to you? Why should I be? I never saw him again. Then it hit me. Wait just one blasted minute. How in the hell did you know about that incident, about what happened in New York that particular afternoon and evening? That was 6 years ago. Are you following me closely? Do you have an open file on me or what? You remember that day very vividly because you became so close to the girl holding the sweater. You lived together in New York until a year ago. And you almost married her, didn't you? How do you know all this? Are you really psychic? Yes, kind of. You're really amazing, I'm shocked. You're giving off strong vibrations, I can read you like a book. I was about to say some very rude things about invasion of privacy, but she motioned me to have patience, saying gently that I would understand everything in due time. So, Charles, don't tell me that you know there are no extraterrestrials here on Earth. Because if you saw one, or even bumped into one, you couldn't tell the difference. Because in looks, An Earthling is no different than any form of human life, in any other part of this galaxy, where conditions are proper for it. Tell me, if you were to meet that hitchhiker again, do you think you would recognize him?
Yes. I'm a fairly good physiognomist.
Part of the job, I guess. Chicho, are you sure you're not with the CIA?
She teased me. I refuse to answer your question on the grounds that it may incriminate me. Besides, I don't know you that well yet.
How do I know you're open enough to handle it? I taunted. I am not with the CIA. And as far as the fellow I drove to Long Island, I suppose I probably would be able to recognize him.
But what proof would that give that he comes from outer space? Before I tell you, Charles, answer one small question. Don't rush your answer. Think about it for a moment or two, okay?
Okay, I agreed.
How would you react?
Would you be frightened, flabbergasted, shocked?
Would your head continue working the same way it has all your life?
You mean my meeting an alleged extraterrestrial?
Yes, that's precisely what I mean.
Well, I might be anxious. But more than anything else, skeptical.
I don't think I'd believe a word of what you're saying.
Suppose I told you that you were talking to someone from outer space, what would you do?
At this very moment.
What would your reaction be?
Are you trying to tell me that you are an extraterrestrial?
From outer space.
I searched her face to see if she were serious. She looked straight at me with those strange eyes. She was serious.
Oh, well, then, allow me to introduce myself, I said, with exaggerated gallantry. My name is Napoleon Bonaparte. She kept looking at me with those serious eyes. Or I might start looking for Mr. Funt's candid camera. But above all, I would smile. She took a few moments before answering. Then she said very slowly and deliberately, her eyes still fastened to mine, Charles, you might just as well start smiling, because I am informing you that at this moment you are talking to an extraterrestrial.
Yes, she said, nodding slowly, someone from outer space.
I wanted to laugh, but I couldn't. Her words, her expression, her eyes, made me feel uncomfortable.
Look, Rama, I said, I've heard a lot of far-out stories, but yours takes the cake.
What have you been smoking?
I had you pegged as a smart girl, but I was getting ready to let her have it when something about her expression stopped me. Her eyes looked into me with such an expression of sadness, I couldn't continue. She looked down, uncharacteristically averting her eyes. All my anger left me. Again, this young woman was managing to touch me. I remembered my promise to her to keep an open mind.
Okay, let's say for the moment that I buy your story, I said, and that I go along with it.
Good, she said, her sad face transformed by a dazzling smile.
Now, wait a minute, Rama, I said I wanted to hear more, not that I'm necessarily going to believe you.
That's fine, she said, you don't have to believe me.
Not this minute, anyway.
That will come later, by itself.
Your friends, are they also alien beings from outer space?
Yes, they are.
We are all here.
We live right here in these mountains.
Why so far away from civilization?
This is the middle of nowhere.
There are several reasons.
She looked at me for a moment.
You're still puzzled and confused, aren't you, Chicho?
She said softly.
No shit, Sherlock.
You're very observant, aren't you, I said, feeling somewhat annoyed by the way she could penetrate my thoughts and feelings.
Sensing my agitation, she said, soothingly, TD like you to be relaxed.
After all, you've been taking all this very well.
And even if you don't believe a word of what I'm saying, I'd still like to tell you more.
I'm quite serious.
And remember, you asked me to tell you the truth, and nothing but.
There's no reason why you should feel the least bit uncomfortable.
Now, I'll explain to you why we choose to be in these mountains.
Yes, I'm very curious about your preference for the wilderness rather than city life.
The location is the most important thing.
This place is inaccessible. Not too many people in their right minds would come this far looking for flying saucers. You definitely couldn't walk to this place. Regular planes are out of the question. In short, only a very specialized kind of aircraft could navigate around here. A kind of aircraft not yet known in this world you live in.